This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Hello and welcome to Ask an Astronomer. I'm Hannah, and with me is Jo Zuntz, who is our astronomer this week. So our first question is from Kenny McLeod. I think that's how you pronounce it. If not, I'm sorry. He has two questions, actually. The first part is, I'm confused about the main cause of redshift in distant galaxies. Is it because galaxies are moving apart relative to space-time, or is it because space-time itself is expanding?
The answer is the latter. Space-time itself is expanding. If you try and make sense of things in a Newtonian or relativistic or special relativistic framework, where the galaxies themselves are moving, which is how Edwin Hubble originally saw things when he measured this effect first, then you very quickly run into problems. Things like you find the galaxies have to go faster than light in some situations, or problems like that. So actually, our understanding of it is that space-time itself is expanding rather than just the galaxies themselves moving. Yes.
So it seems like these other galaxies are moving faster than the speed of light to us.
Potentially, yes. So observationally, it looks exactly the same as if, or for small local galaxies, it looks exactly the same as if the galaxy is just moving away from us. So that's why we originally thought of it this way. But actually, when you look at things on a more large scale, when you have to use general relativity, the full Einsteinian picture of gravity to explain things, then you really do have to think of things a little bit differently, yeah.
And so the second part of his question is, does that mean that the expansion of space stretches the light, giving it a longer wavelength and a lower frequency, hence the redshift effect? And if that's the case, would that make light the only ruler by which the expansion of the universe can be measured, as it's the only thing in our universe that has some of its properties affected by the expansion, e.g. the frequency is affected but not speed?
So the first caveat here is that metaphors like stretching can sometimes mislead you when you're thinking about relativity. But basically, yes, you can think of the expansion of space as stretching photons out and causing redshift. That's one of the ways we visualise that thing happening. Now, the real explanation for that is a little bit more complicated and involves a relationship between density and pressure in radiation and how that is different from matter. But the basic idea is that, yes, the basic way we think of it is that the expansion of space is stretching photons. Now, to the second part of that question, light isn't actually the only thing that's measurable like this. Firstly, gravitational waves, for one thing, also are redshifted in the same kind of way. But photons are certainly the only easily detectable individual thing that's redshifted and stretched in the same kind of way that we can observe directly as seeing the expansion. But as well as looking for individual objects, and this is a fortunate thing for our observations, we can also look at groups of objects, and in particular, the distribution of galaxies across the sky. It's a very good example. It turns out there's a characteristic scale and of the clustering of galaxies, so that groups of galaxies tend to come in blobs of a particular size, which is about 150 megaparsecs, or about 500 light years. And that size is also stretched out as the universe expands, because it's made of galaxies, or galaxies are the thing that's defining that size, so as they expand apart, this scale expands too. Now, this effect, which is called baryon acoustic oscillations, is one of the most important cosmological probes. So it's true that as an individual object or an individual observational kind of unit, the only thing we can see being stretched is photons. But if we look at ensembles of objects or patterns in the sky, we can see those being stretched as well.
So the next question is from Martin. Again, it's in two parts. The first part, the speed of light is the fastest anything goes through space. Is there a limit to how fast space itself can expand?
The answer is no, and there's no limits in known physics. We don't know of a limit. There's nothing built into GR, general relativity, with rules about this that controls this.
So in the early universe, did that expand faster than light then?
Yes, absolutely. We think that in an early period of the universe, the inflationary period, that did happen. And that's not a problem for any kind of relativity at all.
Okay, so that leads on quite nicely to the next part of the question. Are there any theories that suggest the expansion of space was effectively infinite at t equals zero, the Big Bang, and then fell? That conflicts with supernova type 1a evidence, which is that the rate of expansion is increasing, but I'm not sure how well type 1a supernovae are understood.
So another important caveat here, that the period very near t equals zero, the very, very early part of the universe, is still quite uncertain, both observationally and theoretically. It's likely to stay that way observationally because it's very, very hard to probe that part of the universe except very indirectly. But theories are always being developed for this period. Having said that, the basic models have cosmic expansion dominated by radiation in this early period, which we call the pre-inflationary period. And in these models, the expansion rate does tend to infinity as you get closer and closer to the beginning of the universe. Now, we suspect that other physics will come into play at some point, and this won't be the entire story, and so we don't really like this idea of infinities in general, but that is kind of the basic model of this thing. Now, this doesn't conflict with the supernova evidence that you talked about. The acceleration of the universe, accelerated expansion, really happens much, much later. So the first supernova we can actually observe are hundreds of millions of years later than this very, very early period of near the Big Bang. And the switch on of dark energy, as we call it, so the period when acceleration of the universe appears to begin, is typically around 5 or 10 billion years ago, so much, much later than this kind of very early Big Bang phase. So there's no contradiction between this evidence and the theory.
So a final question from Philip King. Is it possible for a gravitational lens to allow us to see the same object at different distances and ages?
The answer is yes, absolutely, and it's a really exciting observation. So strong gravitational lenses can produce multiple images of the same object. We sometimes see things called Einstein quartets or Einstein rings, which are multiple pictures of the same thing. And typically we're seeing multiple copies of the same background galaxy or quasar distributed around the same foreground cluster. The different light paths that go to these images, or rather come from these images, can be different lengths. There's no reason they should all be the same. And that means we're seeing the object at different times. The delays are different from the light to get from there to us. So we're seeing it at different times. Now, this leads to a really interesting cosmological probe where we can measure the universe, which is called a time delay lens. So if we can measure the time difference between these paths and also model the power of the lens, then we can understand the geometry of the universe much, much better in the distance to this object. Now, the most spectacular example of this time delay difference happened very recently when a supernova nicknamed the Refstal supernova was seen going off multiple times. And the final version of that, the final explosion that we saw, actually happened in November 2015 and was predicted in advance. So we saw a first collection of explosions and then we predicted the last one happening many, many years later. So it was a fantastic validation of our model for this gravitational lens and our model and our understanding of this gravitational lensing picture. And it's really important for measuring the expansion history of the universe as well.
Yeah, I think we talked about that on a previous Jodcast, actually. I think it was one of my odds and ends, actually. It was a really cool system. I think that was the one where you had it was lensed by a cluster, and then that one of those images was then lensed by a foreground galaxy, is that right?
I don't know the details, but very possibly, yes. It's also believed that the very first image of those things actually happened in 1988 with nobody watching. So we saw a middle group of them, mm-hmm. and then we saw it. And so part of the question here, I think Philip's asking, is can we sort of see the evolution of objects? With these spectacular supernovae apart, you typically can't, because the time delay differences tend to be too short on the kind of stellar lifetime thing. So it's not like we can see, an system we've seen so far. We can't see an object and say, okay, here it is when it's a young galaxy, here it is when it's an old galaxy. So it's only with these really kind of spectacular evolutions that happen very quickly, like supernova, that we can really, we can see the development happening in real time.
I think one of the primary images is due to go off at some point in the future as well.
There's still another one to come.
That's the last one. So I think it's also, you can use that to work out the Hubble constant, can't you?
You can, yes. So it's a little bit uncertain. So the problem is that if you want to know the Hubble constant exactly, you have to also know the distribution of matter in the lens pretty exactly as well. So there's what we call a degeneracy in this problem, which is that you can get the same observational effect either by changing the mass of the lens or the distribution of the lens, or by changing the Hubble constant. So there's a bit of a problem there in the observations. But with more observations and with more modelling, we can really, really try and pin things down. Yeah.
Thanks for that, Joe. That was really interesting.
Thank you very much.